Well, we're going to try to share a story, but we're going to try to, you know, make it as short as possible. But if you ever want the long version, plan to spend the night.
All right, so we'll just kind of, oh, 5 minute break? Okay, he'll be back. So if you've heard this 50 times and you need to leave, you're not going to hurt our feelings. Just feel free. So, yeah. So we've had several people ask if we'd share the story tonight. And the story of our father's farm and harvest home. And so for me, the story began when I was somewhere around 11 or 12 years old, and I asked my mom why she didn't leave my dad, who was extremely abusive. And my mom's answer was, I have no money, no car, no job, nobody to help me, so where would I go and what would I do? And I thought, when I heard those words, it felt like, you know, to a 10 or 11-year-old, it just felt 12, whatever. I was somewhere right in there. It just felt like I was going to be stuck in this abusive situation forever. And so I ran outside. We lived in South Georgia. I ran out in the field. We lived in the country, and I had this little place tucked away on the edge of the field in the woods that I would often go and sit and be with God and Jesus. And so I ran to that little spot, and I just cried and cried and cried. And at one point when I was exhausted, I said to God, I said, God, when I grow up, I want to have a home for women and children who have nobody and have nobody to help them. And He heard me, you know, and that dream stayed in my heart. So I met Danny, amazing way we met, but I was 18, and actually I met him when I was 10. I got to tell this story. I didn't actually meet him, but when I was 10 years old, my family went to another family's house on a Friday night for, because they had a band there, and my dad and the man of that house were drinking buddies. So that's the only reason we got to go. So we went, and I sat on a footstool the entire night, and I watched this drummer. And I was just infatuated. And so I was probably I think I was 10. And I told God that night that when I grew up, I wanted to marry a drummer like that. So after we were married several months, we were talking one day about life and whatever, and he brought up this family, and I said, well, I know that family. And he goes, yeah, we went and played, our band went and played there one night, and I went, on a Friday night? Yeah. How, when? He said, I was 16, I was 10. And I said, and you played the drums? And he said, uh-huh. He was the drummer that I told God I wanted to grow up and marry one day like him. See, unreal.
Even back then, he's answering our prayers. We don't even know. Yeah.
So we got married October 17th, 1976. And I asked Danny the next day, if money was no object in your life, what would you do? And he said, oh, that's easy to answer. I'd buy a farm and build homes for women and children. And I could have fallen off the side of that North Carolina mountain when he said that. And so that's,
Tennessee,
wherever we were. It was a mountain, that's all I know.
It was in the Rocky Mountains,
Smoky Mountains. So I said, I told him then about my dream, that my prayer that I prayed, and we realized we have the same dream, And so we decided then that we would pray and ask God to bring that to fruition. So fast forward 30 years, we had, he grew up really poor, and I grew up really, really, really poor, and he grew up in a Christian, wonderful, loving family, and I grew up, my mom was a Christian, my dad was not, and my dad was an angry, hurting, broken man, and when he drank, he was out of control. There was it was bad when he was sober, but when it was really bad. So because of the way we were both raised, we both just had a real tender heart towards hurting people, people that were in need. And so our 30 years of marriage, we had people living with us half the time or more, and gave our money away. We could never save money to buy this farm to help people because we just couldn't help ourselves. And so
when we started the ministry of Harvest Home in 1995, the first thing the Lord said to us, give all your money away.
We did.
So in 1993, the Lord, we were living in South Georgia, the Lord made it really clear that we were to move to Kansas City. So we moved in 93, and then in 95, long story short, within just a couple of weeks of each other, we both were out of a job. And so,
let me explain that.
You're making the story long.
That's okay. But the reason she's saying this, we're trying not to make it too long, but in 95, I had a job, she had a job, and there was a conference in St. Louis we wanted to go to. And there were seven of us that wanted to go. And I'm praying and asking the Lord, Lord, you got to make a way. I don't have vacation days right now. I couldn't take off for a week. So he did. So the business I was working for, they sold it. So they come up from North Carolina to tell me to be okay and brought a pastor to comfort me. I'd started laughing. And on the way home, the God said, you're in full-time ministry today. I got even more excited. So when I told Rhonda we're in full-time ministry today, she said, doing what?
And he said, I don't know. You know, the thing about it was, in looking back, I can see why that was so, what? Because we never viewed ourselves in a ministry. It was just life to help people, to see somebody in need and come along and do whatever you can do. It was just life. So when he told me the Lord said that, I'm like, what? What is that? So I had a really strong habit of going in my bathroom as my prayer closet because it was bigger than my closet. And I told Danny, I said, I'm going in the throne room and I'm not coming out until I hear from God because I got to know what we're going to be doing here. And so I went in and spent a few hours and the Lord just spoke to me and he said, do you remember that I told you the day was coming when it would feel like you were being pushed off of a cliff? But for you not to be afraid because I would never let you hit the bottom. And I said, yeah, I remember you telling us that. And he said, well, this is that day. And I went, oh, boy. And then I got a phone call the next day from my boss telling me that I sewed placemats and table runners and cushions for high-end furniture store in Kansas City, really, really nice things. And she called me and said, Rhonda, I am so sorry, but I made a mistake and I forgot to order your fabric. She said, and I'm headed to Europe. It'll be 6 months before I can get you any fabric, so you're out of a job until then. And I'm like, uh-oh, we got a problem. And so So I just kept, Lord, you said we wouldn't hit bottom. And then a neighbor of ours house got on fire, and we ended up taking what we had left and giving it to them. And no job, and just trusting the Lord. He knew what he was doing. So we just kept doing what we'd been doing. It really didn't change full time. Nothing has changed. You're on my blind side. Remember that.
But you're looking at me, and that's okay. I like you looking at me. So anyway, during this period, we had no money coming in. Remember, I just lost my job. She's lost her job. And the Lord said, I'll take care of you. We're going, okay, we believe him. We had faith for that. So we were in a large congregation. Sunday morning, come around. People, guys walk up, shake my hand. How you doing? Good morning. It'd be $100 in my hand. It might be a 50, or it might be $200 or $300. You never knew, you know. And I'm like, well, thank you, Lord. Occasionally, they'd say, well, the Lord said to give you this. Okay. Sometimes they give you a check. And you're like, okay, great, you know. They had no clue what we were doing. We hadn't told anybody except one person. That was the pastor of the church. I felt like we were supposed to tell him because he was the shepherd over everything that had to do with that congregation. And we were part of that congregation. So we told him the Lord's called us into full-time ministry. And he said, well, 2 years later, he said, you know, I kept thinking you're going to come and ask for a job on staff, but you didn't. I go, I never thought of that. He goes, why? I said, well, ain't it what he said? He said, I'll take care of you. I wasn't thinking about a man taking care of me. I was thinking about God. One day, I go out to the mailbox and I open it. And we had the kind at the road, not the locking box. You just open it. I look in, got a couple of pieces of mail. But in the back, there's a stack of money. I reach in, I pull it out. It's not an envelope or anything. It's just a stack of money. I don't even remember how much it was. I remember I was excited. It was a lot of it. So from that point on, Rhonda wouldn't let me get the mail anymore. So he took care of us. We had one bill in a year that was late. And like a week after it was late, one time my house payment, it was $1,000. House payment was $1,000. You know, there's still $1,000 today, sometimes greater than that. But this lady called me a couple of days later and apologized. She said, the Lord told me to send you this over a week ago, and I've procrastinated. I didn't send it. So it's coming. You'll get it tomorrow. And I even included a little extra beyond what he asked because you probably got a bill late, and it covered the late charge. In a whole year, we didn't have other income coming in. There was no residual income from any work, just God.
So, and the Lord had told us in the beginning when we started Harvest Home, he said, I don't want you to tell anybody what you're doing because I want to prove to you that I can take care of you and provide. So like Danny said, we only told our pastor. So anyway, we started outreaches. The Lord would just put things on our hearts, and we started noticing the neighborhood kids where we lived, and so we started a kids explosion, and then that was so successful. We had so many kids come on Saturday morning. We feed them lunch, and then we started a second one, and we started a third one, and we started a fourth one, and got trained other people. And Fred and Barb led one for us back then. So that was one thing we were doing. We went to a nursing home called Little Sisters of the Poor. It was a nursing home for low income, and we it was Catholic, so I got made friends with the nuns there, and they really liked me for some reason and gave me a lot of favor. And so I asked them, I said, do you have anybody here who never gets a visitor or rarely gets a visitor? And they go, oh yeah. I said, would we be able to, could I put together some teams and we kind of adopt them? And they were so happy to do that. So we did that for several years and adopted. In my book, Blessed Are the Poor, I have a story in there about Helen. She was one of the ladies I personally adopted. So we did that. We started the outreach to the homeless downtown Kansas City. We started an outreach to our local police department and fire department. On Monday mornings, we'd take this huge homemade basket full of homemade goodies and cards that our friends had written prayers for the police officers and the firemen, and we'd, every Monday we'd take that to the police department and just love on them. And they started putting cards back in the basket when we come pick our basket up, and notes, and saying, would you pray for, and would you pray this, and would you, it was really, really, really awesome. And I don't know, we just, as the Lord would show us a need, we would begin to fill it. Single moms, single parent families, we adopted them and assigned, found volunteers that would adopt them, and all kinds of fun, really wonderful experiences there. So I say all the time, our 1995 with Harvest Home to 2006 was our training for this place. We learned so much in all the different things that we were doing. We opened a food pantry and a clothing closet, and anybody could come and get groceries and clothing and prayer and ministry, and we just were friends. We just became people's friends, and through being their friend and being there and loving them, they began asking about the Lord, and we were able to preach the gospel because they trusted us and cared about us. So then in 1999, I had flown to Wisconsin because a sweet little lady that I knew, her husband had suddenly passed away. She was like late 80s. And I went out to spend a week with her. And flying back from that, the Lord spoke to me on the plane. And he said, Rhonda, if I ask you to lay Harvest Home down, would you do it? And all I could think of were all these faces of people that I dearly loved, that I spent the last 6 years, 7 years loving on some of them. And I just thought, that's my family, you know. And I said, I finally was able to say to the Lord, you know, Lord, I want to say yes. I don't think in my heart I can do it, but I can say yes. But I need you to do it. I need you to somehow do that. And right after that, all the different outreaches we were doing, people on our teams that we'd raised up started coming up and being such leaders. And we're like, wow. So we just started releasing all the different outreaches we were leading to them, and let them go, laid them down. The Lord just made it easy for us in that regard, because my concern was, how can we just abandon them? I couldn't see that, and that wasn't what he was asking. So everything got covered and kept going, and then we in 1999, a church in Canada asked, would we come there and spend a year and raise up a ministry there like we had done in Kansas City? And so we went there for 9 months and ended up coming back in 10 months. And we were like, what do we do, Lord? You know, the whole ministry was running great, and we were just waiting to see what he wanted us to do. And a week or so later, the gentleman that and his wife who led the homeless ministry came to us and said, we're just so sad to have to tell you this, but we're moving, so we can't lead the homeless ministry anymore, and would you want to take it back? And we're all like, ha ha. So, well, we got to pray about it, but... So anyway, the Lord released us, so we went back into the homeless ministry. And then Dave and Beb joined us in that for a number of years. And Sarah did, and We picked up food from Whole Foods. They donated groceries and several grocery stores, and we would disperse that as well in addition, so we had a food pantry. Anyway, so
we're doing this, and she said dispersing food. In the midst of that change, the Lord had me open up a thrift store for a year. And I think the main reason was he was going to give us a lot of food. We were feeding the homeless, and we were giving away drinks and things like that. And I'd been going around to different grocery stores. And I was picking up food 7 days a week. It was so much that the church we were going to was Metro Christian Fellowship. Big, giant building. They asked me to put them at the second door because I'd come in with 21 to 22 crates, banana box size, big, to give away food. So anybody that was going through that door, get all the food they wanted. I mean, it's just unreal what he was giving us. Well, I thought that was a lot. But when I had this thrift store, and I gave away so much food. So much clothes and good stuff. And just amazing stuff to come in. And, you know, somebody come in, I said, hey, you like that? Great. You know, it's a nickel, you know, something like that. He started giving us pallets of food, not just boxes. Pallets. Well, I needed a place to store it. So the store made enough money to pay all the rent and a big storage place in the back to store all the food. So, you know, and there's a couple of things exciting. Fred hit a electric wire one time when he was drilling a hole in the wall, put a screw in. He decided, Fred's sitting back there, he decided not to put any more screws in that wall for me after that. So we had some excitement going on. We had the homeless outreach. We filled up Dave's basement unreal. We just had food everywhere. I had so much, I had to start giving away to different church groups who wanted to pick up food. And we did. We go, okay, you want a store for Tuesday? Here, this is the store. You take this. You want one for Wednesday? Here, take this one for Wednesday. We only needed 2 days. And even then, I was getting 20 cases of stuff. So the Lord is just pouring out. It's exciting times.
So anyway, so then fast forward to 2006. And in November, I had a dream. And then Danny had a dream in December. Basically, in both dreams, the Lord said in 2007, my father and I will give you that farm. We've been praying for the farm since we got married for 30 years. And so we're all like, oh, we're going to get the farm. In 2007, he said. So we had a group of intercessors that had been praying from day one, 1995. So we shared with them, hey, these dreams, let's pray. Well, one of the intercessors that had been with us for years was Elizabeth Phillips. And she was a realtor. She and her husband, Richard, were realtors. So when she hears that God's going to give us a farm, she's starting to look for us a farm. And we had told her probably 20 acres. You know, we didn't have hardly any money at that point.
12,000.
We had 12,000 in the ministry account. And so we weren't even thinking about how we were going to buy a farm. It just never occurred to us. He said it. It's going to happen. So there we go. Well, she came back in January and brought me a spec sheet on this farm. And it was listed at 325 acres for $1.6 million. And there was one house on it. And I just said, oh, Elizabeth, 20 acres, you know, like
80 max.
Yeah. So I just put the piece of paper on my bookshelf, and I went to bed. And in the middle of the night, I wake up, and I've never had this happen since then or before, but that I woke up in the middle of the night, and I was shaking from head to toe, physically shaking, because the presence of the Lord was so strong in my room. And I hear in my head, go get that piece of paper. I didn't have to ask what piece of paper. I knew. I just knew that piece of paper that I put on. So I get up and I get the paper and I'm shaking and I crawl back in bed and I'm, okay, I got the paper. And I hear clear as daylight, he says, I want you to ask me for that farm. And I said, does that mean you're going to give it to us? And I hear him say, I didn't say that. I said, for you to ask me for it. And so I thought about that for a little bit. And I went, oh, okay, I get it. This one, he wants me to do it by faith. He's not going to, yeah, he just got to, in my heart, I got to get my faith meter right. And so I tell Danny, and so we just would lay hands on that piece of paper and say, Yahweh, would you give us this farm? And we hadn't even come to see it. The whole prayer team went to see it, but he and I didn't come see it. I couldn't do it until I knew that he was going to give it to us. Just because he told us to ask him for it didn't mean he was going to give it to us. So I didn't come out. Anyway, they all come out and see it, and they come back and tell us, oh, it's perfect, it's beautiful, it's wonderful. And I'm like, okay, that's good, 1.6 million, still 1.6 million, you know. And so in June, we were scheduled to speak in Singapore. And so I had ministered in some Asian churches in California for years. I'd go out, fly out 3 or 4 times a year there. So what ended up happening was Danny needed to stay back with the ministry. I flew ahead, went to California, ministered in those 4 churches. I think it was 4 that day, that year. And then the plan was he was going to fly to California, meet me there, and then we'd fly from there to Singapore. Well, I'm staying in the same house that I had stayed in for probably 6 years. And I never noticed that they had this grandfather clock at the bottom of their spiral staircase. Beautiful home, mansion, gorgeous. And I just never noticed this clock. It wasn't ticking, just there. Well, this particular time, I'm walking up and down the hallway in the foyer in front of that grandfather clock, and I'm praying and I'm crying and I'm saying, Father, will you give us that farm? Will you give us the farm? And I'm just praying. And at one point, I stop in front of the grandfather clock. I don't know why, I just happened to stop there. And the Lord had been speaking to us for about 10 years using the numbers 3 and 7. Every time we turned around, 333 or 777 or 73 or 37, or it was just, you couldn't deny it because it was so ridiculously everywhere. And so I had been praying Psalm 37 for almost a year. 5 times in Psalm 37, God says, I'll give you the land. And I'd been praying that over this farm. And so I'm standing in front of that grandfather clock, and I just stopped, and I got tears. I'm just crying. I said, Father, how long before you give us a farm? You said 2007. It's already June. And just as I say, how long, I look up, and that clock, the little hands on the 3, and the big hand stopped on the 7, and the clock chimes. And it about scares me silly, because I'd never heard, it wasn't wound, it wasn't tick-tocking. It just chimed, and it was really chiming because I looked at that big gold thing, and it was, so it was real. And I fall on the floor, and I hear the Lord audibly say, it's time, I'm going to give you that farm. And I'm in a puddle on the floor. The owners of the house, Quay May and Darwin, come running out because they hear me. I must have screamed or something, and they heard the clock chime, I'm sure. And they come running out, and they see me on the floor, and I can't even talk. All I can do is point up at the clock. She knew about the 3s and 7s, and she sees the clock. She goes, oh, 3-7, 3-7. I go, yeah, I'm just all right. She runs in the kitchen to get me some Kleenex. She screams. She's Asian. She says, Rhonda, Rhonda, it's 10:37. And she's having a meltdown in the kitchen, the whole 37. So anyway, we flew on to Singapore, did the conference. It was the last day of the conference last night. And then the host family we were staying with got a phone call. The husband did, Francis. He got a phone call from an old college roommate that he hadn't talked to since college, 20-something years. And this old roommate asked him to come to his house that night for supper. And for dinner, I think y'all call it dinner here. Georgia calls it supper. So Francis told him, said, well, we have guests from the States. And he said, oh, bring them. So anyway, so the plan, Danny had hurt his back, so he stayed home, and Francis went to work, and then his wife, Shireen, and myself, and a surgeon from China, the three of us caught the train, and the plan was to meet Francis at his job and drive from there. So we got on the train, and I'm sitting in this train and looking around, and I see this young girl. She has her back to me. She's holding onto the pole, and I'm seated. And I can't take my eyes off this girl's back. I mean, I'm like, what is it, Lord? You want me to pray for her? Is there something you want me to tell her? What is it? And I just couldn't, nothing. And then just a few minutes later, she turns around and faces me. And she has on a white T-shirt with baby blue, big 37. Big 37. That's all that was there. No words, just 37. And Shireen is elbowing me because, like I said, everybody knows it's anytime with me, anytime. There's 37s and 73s everywhere. She's elbowing me, 37, 37. And I go, I know, I see it. You know, and I look up at this girl, and she's looking right at me, right in my eyes, and she goes, and I go, and I noticed she had on a little Christian fish necklace. In Singapore in 2006, there was less than 2% Christian in that country. You just didn't see that. And I go, oh my goodness. She nods, smiles, and turns her back to me again. And Shireen is going crazy. And I'm like on the inside going crazy. And I said, hey, I bet that's an angel. That's got to be an angel. I said, I'm going to go ask. And just as I go to get up, the train starts stopping, so I have to sit back down. And the doors open, and she turns and looks at me one more time, and she goes, mm-hmm. And she gets off the train. So I told Shireen, I said, I don't know, where are we going? What? Tell me about this. What? Something's going on. And she said, I don't know. We don't know. I don't know this guy. We haven't seen him. I don't know. And so we get in the car, in Francis's car, and he's driving, and the surgeon's in the front, Shireen and I are in the back seat. And Francis takes a piece of paper and hands it back to his wife and asks her to read the address out loud so she knows where to go. He knows where to drive. So she says, 37 Mount Sinai Rise. I said, I was over here, she was right there, I went, what? She said, 37, I said, Mount Sinai Rise? She goes, yeah. I said, what's this guy's name? And Francis said, now, Rhonda, don't get excited. He said, this dude was my roommate in college, and he was worse than bad. He was like, bad. I haven't talked to him since college days. And so don't you get excited. I said, what's his name? He said, the best pronunciation is a Chinese name is Yahweh. I said, I'm going to 37 Mount Sinai Rise to talk to Yahweh? And I just had an angel on a train with a 37 t-shirt. Okay, I'm I said, okay, nobody talk to me. Man, I got to make sure I don't have any sin in my life. I was serious. I was not playing. And because I've never, there, yeah. So we get there, and we find out that he's on the seventh floor of 37 Mount Sinai. So we get to the door, and Francis looks at me. He rings the doorbell. He looks at me, and he says, "Don't get excited." I said, "Too late." And the door opens, and I see this man, and he looks clean, great, friendly. He's just grinning, and right behind him on the wall is this big framed, in English, New Testament passage. I can't remember what verse it was. It's framed behind him. And I looked at Francis, and I said, "I told you, it's going to be good." So we have dinner, and I ask him and his wife to share their stories, because there's just not many Christians in Singapore, and they were both Christians, so they shared their story, and he said that he had been in the hospital, he was dying, and just a week before this, and literally Jesus walked in his hospital room in the middle of the night, picked up the chart that was hanging at the foot of his bed, told him not to be afraid, he wasn't going to die, and he said, "I have 10 things I have for you to do for me." And then he wrote something on the chart, and he hung the chart back at the foot of the bed, and he turned and walked out of the room. So the next morning, this man was dying. They'd called the family in, given him less than 24 hours to live. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with him. And the next morning, a friend of his who was a doctor on the other side of the island had heard that he was dying, so he came over first thing in the morning. And he picked up his chart, and he saw written on there, "This man is allergic to," and it was the name of a medicine. And he flips some pages, and he says, "They're giving you this medicine." So he gets his doctor in there, and they were killing him, because he was allergic to whatever the medicine was. And he said he went home within 24 hours. And he said, and the Lord, one of the 10, he didn't tell us all, he only told us one. One of the 10 things that he was to do was to give away all his money. And he was very, very, very wealthy. And he said, and I'm in the process of doing that right now. And then so then he turns to me and he says, "I believe the Lord has a word for you. May I give it to you?" And I'm thinking to myself, your name is Yahweh and I'm on Mount Sinai. You can tell me, yeah, give it to me. I'm trying to be all cool and collected and all professional, you know, but I was not on the inside. So he takes his electronic Bible on his phone and he says, "The Lord wants me to pray Psalm 37 over you." So he prayed the first 7 verses, and then he said something like, "I see a vision of a farm. It's large. I see animals. I see people coming there that are broken and sick and in need of healing physically, emotionally, spiritually. And I see people leaving completely healed. And the Lord says to tell you, don't worry about how you're going to pay for it. He's going to pay for it." And then he said some more personal things. And so, so I get home and tell Danny.
So she has her experience with Yahweh and Mount Sinai. And while that's happening to her, he shows up in my room. And, you know, he is omnipresent. So all he's here, there, and everywhere. And so I had hurt my back, and I would have gone, but I couldn't get down the steps. I mean, I could not walk down. We were up more than one floor up, and there wasn't no elevator. So I'm laying in bed in pain, and I'm thinking, well, maybe there's something on TV I can watch. I prayed already. Nothing's happened from that. And then it's like he shows up, because I had one question for him. He said, "What's your question?" I said, "Well, I understand the ministries that's going right now, and I understand, see, I'm the practical side. I understand the money coming in, and I see how everything works and how it goes up and down and up and down. But I don't see how we can support this large of a piece of property with what we got coming in right now. It just, you know, not that I don't want it. I just don't see a change. Nothing's changed enough to make a difference. And what he did was he showed me. He said, well, if you get this piece of property with the one house owner, and it's where Ed and Susanna live, that if you do nothing for a whole year, at the end of the year, everything will be paid for. And I'm like, what? He goes, yes, there's an income stream on the farm that you're not aware of. And truly was. Now, I wasn't taking into account donations or anything like that. But if we did nothing, it'd be taken care of at the end of the year. If Rhonda and I just sat there and read books for a year, at the end of the year, we wouldn't owe anything at all, still. And so I'm like, okay, I'm in. So when she gets back and tells me her story, I'd already decided my story. So then we come back and start negotiating with this couple. And they started at 1.6, and, you know, the next thing you know, we get it down to 1.4, and they wouldn't change anything, just 1.4. And we're both discussing that, and we're looking at it and going, you know, there are no threes or sevens in $1.4 million. It's just something, it just ain't working right. So, but the Lord said, do it anyway. So I did. So I wrote him a check for $10,000. That left us two in the bank. On a $1.4 million piece of property, I gave him a $10,000 check saying that we would take it and sign for it. And at that time, they chose the closing date of October 17th. Now, you remember, this is back in June.
No, it's July.
July 3rd. Yeah, July 3rd.
7-03-07.
Yeah.
We signed a contract.
I signed a contract, yeah, for $1.4 million. And gave him an earnest money of $10,000. Couldn't prove we were going to. Anyway, you know, I told him, you know, my father's wealthy. He owns cattle on 1,000 hills, you know, 1,000 cattle. We closed. Now, our realtor, Richard, bless his heart, he's like, we could extend it a little further, have a little more time to get money in. No. So, like every good steward does, we immediately started raising funds for it. No, we did not. We actually went on ministry trips. We actually went on a vacation. Short.
China.
We went to China for 3 weeks. And so this is July. Well, September, we finally got around to sending out a newsletter about it. So the first week, 1st of September, we sent out a newsletter telling we think we found it, asked people to pray, see what the Lord would do, and literally, you know, and sent it out to about 1,000 people. Well, that was September 1. October 10th, $1.5 million had come in. Now, there's a whole bunch of funny stuff that happened with the bank because I started with just a simple little, you know, $1,000 check and told them that, you know, I'm just opening an account and we're going to buy a farm that's $1.4 million. Well, in the process of that, by the end of July, or July 7th, they claimed they had 325 acres. But when they went and pulled the title, it said 321. Well, when they did that, they arbitrarily changed the price, said a 1.4.
Well, and the other thing is the date that this happened. On 7:30... Elizabeth called me and said, I've got good news and bad news. What do you want first? I said, give me the bad news. She said, well, they advertised 325 acres. They've discovered they only have 321 acres. I said, that's not bad news. We only wanted 20 acres to start with. And I said, so what's the good news? She said, well, the good news is they decided to drop the price. And I said, okay. She said they dropped it to $1,391,173. And if you look at all those numbers, there's 1-7, and all the rest of them add up to threes. It's just God's signature all over it. And so that was what we ended up paying for the farm.
You think about this. If you were selling a farm, you would choose $73. Now, most of y'all would choose $75 or $80. Nobody chooses $73 but God.
How the Lord does that, I don't know. But
I don't know.
So that was on July 30th. So that was another real big boost to my faith. I went, okay, there's the 3 and 7 in the price. I was looking for that. Not that I had to have it because he said go ahead anyway. But also with the farm, we finally decided to come out and look at it after all that. So the one house that was here, up at the brick house of Ed and Suzanne live in right now. When we were looking at that house, I asked their realtor, I said, what's the square footage of this house? She said, I don't know, let me go look. So she pulls it up, and it was 3,737 square feet. Yeah. And
the address is
1177 300 Road. And the zip code 640-49379. I mean, it just keeps, it just kept going and going. It was crazy. Only God. So then in October 10th, when he was referring to it, we were $500,000 short of having the money. And we knew that unless we had the cash, we weren't going to buy it. We knew we would not go into debt. Because if it really was God, he doesn't have a problem. Money, he's not short on cash, ever. So it was just, okay, Lord, if you really want it, okay, we're not going to go into debt. And the bank offered to make us a loan because we already had $1 million in the bank. But nope, if he doesn't. So that on the 10th, $400,000. Yeah, 391,000. Okay, whatever. So on the 10th of October, and we had to close on the 7th. And so, 17th, sorry. So we went to the post office. Richard was with us, the realtor, Danny, myself, and another lady on our staff. And Danny comes out and hands me two envelopes. He says, you got to see this. I opened the first one. It was for 500,000. And I opened another one. It was for 50,000 or something. So we ended up with 100-something thousand more than what we needed. Just a few days, 7 days from closing, 6 days actually. So on the 17th, that morning, we closed. And we decided, since it was our wedding anniversary, we would just come out here that night and spend the night and just celebrate the Lord. So we walked in the garage. We drove in the garage of the house. I walked in the kitchen, and just as I walked in the kitchen, the alarm on the stove went off. And I turned and looked at it, the clock, and it was 7:33 p.m. So, anyway, that's the story of how we got this farm. And then 6 months later, two different people made two really large donations, and we were able to purchase the house in the entrance that we call the gatehouse, and then where Johnny and Davey live, and we were able to build those two, the Dave and Bev's house they're in now and Dee live in, and then the father's house next door with those donations. And that's what we've done. As the Lord provided the money, we built another house. And in this building, I think we'll end with this story.
Let me tell this one because it was quite interesting. Not that other stuff wasn't interesting, but to get this building, I was calling around looking for a place for horses so that we could use them in the winter. And I wasn't looking for this building this size, 100 by 100. It looks like it's long, but it's square. So it's an optical illusion, but it's 100 foot long and 100 foot wide. So I'm calling around different places that sold buildings and getting an idea. And I'm like, wow, man, the price of these things is off the chart. So I wind up calling this one place, and all of a sudden this guy picks the phone up. He goes, hello. And I'm like, he says, what do you want? I'm looking for a building for a horse, a metal building. He says, how big? You know, and I said, I don't know, maybe 40, 50. He goes, well, I tell you what I got. I've got a building that's 100 foot square. And I said, well, I want it with 16 foot sides. He goes, exactly what I got. A building with 100 foot square, 16 sides. He said, I give you this price for it. And it was like $60,000, whatever. It was ridiculous. And I said, well, I don't have that much. You know, we probably had $5,000 at the bank, maybe 10, I don't know. Because we had just built and bought and built and bought. And we was just, as it was coming in, we were building, you know. We were not spending it on anything in particular. And he goes, okay. I said, I tell you what, I need to talk to my intercessors and my wife and other people on the farm. And we'll pray about it, and I'll call you back and let you know, you know. He's like, okay, and hangs up, just like that. So I go and tell them. The intercessors happened to be meeting. And so we had a lot of faith. Most of them had a little tiny stick. I got a picture of this. They got a little tiny stick of faith. They're holding up a little tiny stick of faith. But that's all it took, because we didn't have the money for it. So I call him back and tell him, well, you know what? We'll take the building. He said, well, I've already had two or three distributors. He said, we're the ones that build it. I have distributors that buy these from us and then resell them. Let me tell you what it really, the value of it is. It's like $100,000. I'm like, oh, he goes, because he'd quoted, I think it was like $60,000. Then I'm fixing to ask him to drop the price. And another, he automatically dropped the price, $10,000, just out of the blue. He said, I got to tell you the story. He said, when I answered that phone,
he was the owner
of the company that didn't just sell it, they manufactured this building. And he said, I walk by the phone, it's ringing, and something grabbed my arm and stuck my hand on that phone and picked it up and brings it up here, and I go, hello. He goes, I pay people to answer my phone. I got people that can answer the phone. I got a lady sitting right there. He said, but it's like an angel or something. I said, probably an angel. Had my hand, put it on that phone, pick it up, and then I'm like, I don't even know what you're supposed to say at my business. He said, I kept thinking later when I hung up, should have said, may I help you? Well, he goes, I don't know. What? He said, I asked that lady, what do you say? He told the name of the business, you know, but he didn't tell us anything. He just says, hello. He said, whatever it is you're doing, God's in it. And I said, well, we'll take the building. I said, we only got one problem. We ain't got all the money yet. I said, but we'll take it. He goes, I'll take your word for it. I said, we'll get the money together. The Lord will provide. And when he does, I'll call you back and we'll take the building. And he said, okay. So the Lord sent the money in. You know, we're shortening a lot of things. A lot of things happening in 20 now. So I call him back, tell him I got the money. He said, okay, I'll send it out. So it came out in two semi-trucks. Well, when they get here, I just wrote them a check. You know, I didn't think anything about it. I've been writing checks. I've been making $100,000 deposit. This is nothing compared to $1.46 million, you know. This is nothing. And so I write a check, hand it to the guy. The guy goes, he won't take this. I said, how do you know? He goes, well, I've been with this company for like, I don't know, 15, 20 years, and he's never taken a check before. I said, well, call him and ask him. He said, look, I got his personal phone number. I'll call him and you can ask him. He goes, no, I got his number. I'll call him. So he calls him up. The guy's name was Kim. Calls him up. He said, I don't remember. I can't think of his last number. Anyway, call him Mr. Whatever. He says, I'm here with this delivery, and he's just giving me a check. And the guy said, take it. And he said, what? I said, take it. Okay. He hung up. I'm standing the right side of him, and he hung up, and he goes, okay, I'll take the check. So I handed him the check back, because he'd give it back to me before I handed it back. I said, here you go. He goes, I've never seen anything like this in my life. He said, I mean, he has never, ever done this. I'm thinking, God, yeah, God does the unbelievable, the impossible. is nothing. You know, he does that every day.
So we had the shell, but we didn't have the money to finish it out.
And so
the Lord provided that. And then one day we were, all the staff was together, and we were just spending time with the Lord. And it wasn't just staff, it was residents as well. We were all together. And I have this vision, and I see myself swimming with an angel down to the depth of the ocean. And there's this big treasure chest there, and the current caught the lid of the treasure chest, and it opened up. And there, it was filled with jewels and gold and silver coins. And this angel tells me to take two coins. So I get two gold coins, one in each hand. And the minute I do, we shoot straight up out of the ocean, and we shoot straight up into heaven. And I'm standing in the throne room, and I see this blinding light. And Jesus, Yeshua, is standing beside me. And I'm here, and then the blinding light's here. And all of a sudden, I see a hand come out of the light, and it has this white, it's a white envelope with a red wax seal sealed closed. And this voice calls for an angel. An angel appears like a comet and stands in front of the light. And I asked Yeshua, I said, "What is that?" And he said, "That's an invitation from my Father for one person on earth to give $1 million to build that building, this building." And he said, "That one gold coin in your hand represents that one person that's going to give $1 million. And he said, "The gold coin in your second hand will be another $1 million, but it'll come from a number of people." And so this angel grabs that invitation, and like a comet shoots out of there, and all of a sudden it's over, just like that. So I'm sitting there, and I'm writing this down in my journal, what I just saw. And the person that was leading our prayer time ended the meeting and said, "Does anybody have anything they want to share?" And a couple of people shared a couple of things, and then this one real timid, quiet girl, resident, she never hardly ever talked. She raised her hand and said, "Well, I saw this treasure chest in the ocean, and it was open, and it had all these coins, and I wanted some so bad, but this angel told me it wasn't for me to have." And I'm sitting there going, "I got them." You know, I didn't say anything. And then this other girl goes, "Oh, I saw the same thing." And I went, "Okay, that's it. I got them. I got the two gold coins." So I shared. And this young girl, that the first one that shared, she actually, I think we have it on the wall over there somewhere. She actually got a white envelope, went and got it and made the wax seal and framed it for us, then put a gold coin on it. But anyway, so within less than a week, I got a phone call from somebody that lives somewhere else. And she called and she said, "I'm calling to ask you to pray." And I said, "What do you want me to pray about?" And she said, "I believe I've received an invitation from the Lord to donate $1 million to build that building." That was her exact words. I said, I'll pray. You know, I didn't tell her. So she called me back in about a week or so and said, "Yeah, it's confirmed. I'm working to get some stuff and free up $1 million. You'll be getting it soon." So that was the first gold coin. And then we got started on the building. And then the second million, just like he said, came from here and there and everywhere, just to finish this building. And so it's been one supernatural, amazing, incredible, challenging, faith-building journey. And we've learned a lot, and we've seen God do the impossible so many times. And it's not even about the place or the buildings, it's about the people. You know, he sent the most incredible people here to us for 17 years. We've just had, I don't even know how many thousands have been through this place. And just some amazing, amazing people. And we're just so grateful to be in, that the Lord would see fit to hear a 10 or 11-year-old prayer, a little girl, you know, didn't even know what I was praying, really, and to share his dream with us, because this is his dream. That's why we named it Our Father's Farm. It's his farm. It's not ours. We're just stewards. And amen. Anything
else? Amen. So, I've had a number of people that heard about the farm and the money that came in and stuff like that. Word gets around real fast, especially the neighborhood. It's amazing how many people will come to your door and offer to sell you something when they think you've got money. I mean, I couldn't tell you how many came and offered to sell me their farm here. And I'm like, you don't understand. I don't have any money. It's my father's got money. Well, maybe he'd want to buy it. And I'm thinking, he already owns it. You know, you're just on loan. So we just pray that tonight you guys are blessed and that y'all sleep well and that the angels that are visiting you tonight will be a blessing to you. And so those of you that are guests, that maybe this is your first time here ever, you have some authority because you have been invited here on this farm by us. And so that if something decides to come in your room, we call them critters, decides to mess with you in the night, you have the authority to kick them out, okay? And that's just how it works. That's God's protocol. It's not mine. I didn't set that up. He did. So, you know, now me, I just sleep right through them now. The only one that wakes me up now is God.